This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch the TV version of our show on Free Speech TV weekdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. President Obama, in his last few months in office, is frantically trying to cement his legacy. And one of the most important issues is international trade. The Liberal Democrat has defied labor unions in championing two widely reviled trade pacts, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, between the U.S. and a number of Pacific nations, and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP, between the U.S. and European Union. Now it appears that both agreements have reached roadblocks. Late last week, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that the Senate would not vote during this term on the TPP, and German Vice Chancellor Sigmar Gabriel recently made public the fact that U.S.-EU negotiations on the TTIP had failed. My guest is Preston Pickus. He is a progressive independent candidate for Congress in California's 12th District in San Francisco, running against Nancy Pelosi. And trade deals are his thing. Welcome to the program, Preston.
Thanks so much for having me, Sonali.
Well, let's talk about the TTP, which is the main one that has gotten a lot of attention here in the United States, particularly among labor unions, but also environmentalists, people interested in healthcare. It's a very broad and secretive agreement that has received very broad and very public opposition to it. How do you respond to McConnell's statement that basically this is a lame duck Senate and we are not going to vote on it this year? He's made clear that he's not necessarily against the TPP, but that it's just not going to happen this year. Is that a victory?
I would say we could be cautiously optimistic about that. For a long time, people in Congress have been going sort of back and forth with mild statements against the TPP and then strong sort of support for it. And if you remember back with NAFTA, the TPP is like NAFTA on steroids. It's all the bad things about NAFTA, but expanded in a way. And a lot of Congress people said that they were going to vote against NAFTA and then ended up voting for it. So even though they're sort of saying right now that they're not going to do it, the language isn't clear enough to me. And the history that we have with trade agreements leads me to believe that they might have something up their sleeve.
Right. And in fact, Mitch McConnell specifically said the current agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which has some serious flaws, will not be acted upon this year, but it will still be around. It can be massaged, changed, worked on during the next administration. So I hope America will stay in the trade business. Now, that worries me a little bit. Obviously, it has many, many flaws, but the chances of Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate Majority Leader, wanting to change the TPP likely means change it for the worse, if that's even possible, not necessarily change it for the better, right?
Right, exactly. So my opponent, Congresswoman Pelosi, gave a similar sort of lukewarm, we don't like the TPP in its current fashion. And the truth is, 85% of the people sitting down at the negotiation table are corporate executives or interested in private business. And so when you take a look at this deal, what it does, and this is the problem with trade agreements generally, is this deal is an alignment between multinational corporations, and it's giving them a huge amount of power. It's this massive giveaway in the interest of whatever profits they want from the people of those nations. So the 11 nations involved, you can say clearly that the people are going to suffer. It's going to weaken labor agreements. That's why the AFL-CIO and almost every labor union has come out so strongly against it. It's going to hurt government's capacities to regulate in favor of better environmental standards. It's going to do really crazy things like give multinational corporations the ability to sue a government if that government regulates something and it costs them money. And this is really troubling. And so with these lukewarm statements from politicians like Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi saying they're kind of against it, historically what you can see is that at the end of the day, there's this sort of belief that if the multinational corporations or the very powerful CEOs want something, then it's going to kind of trickle down and benefit everybody eventually. And that's just not going to be the case.
Right. I mean, there are so many problems with the TPP. We've covered many of them individually for the last several months on our program. And it's interesting, of course, that putting off of the TPP, the delaying of the signing of the TPP, even if it's a, you know, cautious victory, is actually coming through the actions of a Republican rather than Democrats. Aside from someone like Nancy Nancy Pelosi, whose opposition to the TPP is not necessarily the best principled opposition. You do have folks like Russ Feingold, Senator Bernie Sanders, who've come out very strongly from a progressive perspective against the TPP. But what about the Democrats as a whole, Preston? Shouldn't the Democrats, who get so much support, unconditional support from labor unions, be united against the TPP, even if they don't have majorities in Congress?
Oh, you know, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you see Tim Kaine as the pick for Clinton for vice president sent a very strong signal of being pro-business, pro-TPP. And so, you know, again, I think this always comes down to who's investing in our campaigns, who's donating the money, who's sort of propping up these individual politicians. And like I've talked about a lot, is it's 0.01% of Americans. It's really extremely wealthy people donating thousands and tens of thousands and millions of dollars. And so even though the Democrats, and especially establishment Democrats, will say sort of certain things to get elected, at the end of the day, they need those campaign donations. You got to raise $2.5 million to run for Congress or $1 billion to run for president. And or average people, we don't have that kind of money. So, you know, the Republicans and Democrats really look very similar, especially on something like trade. And I really think it's important for people to understand trade agreements could be good. You could have an agreement between these 11 nations that says, you know what, if you have bad labor practices or if you are really, you know, burning a lot of fossil fuels to create your goods and that's lowering your price, well, we're going to increase a tariff. We're going to put a tax on that because that's not something that we want for the world. It's just that these negotiations never go that way. We don't have anybody at the table when these negotiations are taking place. We have very few people who are arguing for what's best for humanity. And instead, what you have is a group of individuals really focused on the corporate profits and on sort of delimiting the amount of regulation that democratically elected governments can do. And, you know, so you look at the EU and their resistance to the TTIP, and you look at, you know, sort of what's going on with the TPP. And what you can see is, again, it's this sort of oligarchical few funding campaigns, having those representatives sort of support slash not support slash vote through. And at the end of the day, you can't expect that they're going to go against their own financial best interests.
I think that's a really good point you just made, that it's not that people opposing the TPP are anti-trade, they're just anti-pro-corporate secret trade deals, right? That are anti-worker, anti-environment. That's what people are against. And, you know, it's we don't stop to consider the fact that a trade agreement could be good if it was written in the interest of humanity rather than corporate profits. Now, what about, let's turn to the TTIP. Sigmar Gabriel, the vice chancellor of Germany, essentially said these negotiations are failed. Again, just like the TPP, everything's done in secret. There's been massive opposition to the TTIP in the EU. And Sigmar Gabriel just sort of dropped this bomb, if you will, in expressing publicly saying, in my opinion, the negotiations with the United States have de facto failed, even though nobody is really admitting it. What is, you know, this is clearly good news both for the EU and the US, but is it just as in the case of the TPP, as far as you know, a delay, or could this be the end of the TTIP?
You know, I don't think that we are going to end these kinds of trade agreements until we really change who sits at the table making these decisions. And as long as a tiny minority of super wealthy people are buying all the political interests, we're going to have a hard time getting better ones. And so what's interesting about the TTIP is that's an agreement between the U.S. and the European Union. And in the European Union, most of the countries have very strong sort of labor practices. They have, you know, very good health care. You know, for instance, in the TPP, one thing that it does is it gives pharmaceutical companies a longer period of ownership over their or monopoly rights to their drugs, and then before it can become generic. So that is going to jack the price of drugs. In the TTIP, what it looks like is the U.S. is sort of trying to deregulate some elements, or the not the U.S. specifically, but multinational corporations who want to sort of exploit the workers and exploit sort of the strong social safety nets of Europe. And that's where a lot of the resistance has come from. So if you look at, like, there's a lot of concerns about what's going to happen with the NHS over there. You know, the Independent and the Guardian have both come out strongly against it. And so in that case, you know, I would say that the TTIP, although, again, it's still very secret, so it's hard to know exactly what it's going to do. But I would say based on what's happened now, we have a better chance of defeating it. However, that doesn't mean that the next trade agreement that these people come up with is going to be any better. And so we're going to have to maintain our vigilance.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, the NHS being the National Health Service in countries like Britain, which, of course, we don't have something like that here in the United States. We don't have a single payer system, which is essentially what that is. So let's talk about President Obama's legacy, if you will. I mean, this is what presidents do in their last few months in office. They try to rush through what they think are going to be glowing, platforms and very specific issues that they've managed to accomplish that can be part of their presidential legacy. Why, as far as you can tell, does Obama think that the TPP and the TTIP will make him look good in retrospect? Is he just sort of misunderstanding or seeing something utterly different from what this vast public opposition to these trade deals are seeing? Does he know something we don't know? Why would he want such widely reviled trade deals as his legacy when he has nothing to lose by simply letting them fail?
Yeah, so, I think there are two things going on here. One, you know, the basic sort of strategic argument around TPP is limiting China's influence over the Pacific Rim nations, who are mostly the ones involved in this. And I don't really buy it. I still think it's a big multinational land grab, but that's sort of the justification that they give. I think on a broader level, President Obama has done some really great things, but he's also done some really terrible things. And you take a look at things like NDAA 2012, which allows for the indefinite detainment of U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. You look at the way that he's gone after whistleblowers. You look at sort of the way that he's expanded the NSA. And you can kind of see a pattern of thinking. And in my opinion, I think he takes a look at situations and says, you know, really smart people at the top of these corporations are going to make really great decisions. And so let's just give them more power and things will get better. And I have to say that most of us disagree with that. What we've seen over time is that a lot of times these very powerful individuals are just pretty greedy and pretty corrupt, and they're not actually going to work together to make humanity have better things, but instead it's going to be a little bit worse. And so I feel like this is a sort of last attempt at a very pro-corporate presidency to solidify sort of these sort of trade arrangements in a way that, you know, if I had to guess, that backfills and gives some solidarity or some is going to solidify pro-corporate sort of giveaways that we've seen over the last 8 years.
So if it turns out, as it's looking now likely, that both these trade deals will not pass in the last few months of Obama in office, I can't imagine, first of all, if there's a Trump presidency, I think the trade deals are going to be the least of our problems. But if there's a Clinton presidency, she has come out verbally having some sort of level of opposition, perhaps a Pelosi-like level of opposition to these trade deals. But we know that, for example, during the Democratic National Convention, it was revealed that if she wins, she will simply sign the TPP at least. And so it doesn't seem as though Obama would be succeeded by a liberal Democrat any more progressive than he is.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the two mainstream choices there are both very pro-trade. And so I think, you know, you don't have to look any further than Clinton's taking of Tim Kaine. He was one of the least progressive choices that she could have made. He really wants to give the banks, he wants to deregulate the banks even further. And we're seeing the problems with that already. He's for the TPP. And so I think what'll be important for the folks that want to pass the TPP and are interested in weakening our labor rights and interested in weakening sort of middle-class Americans for the profit of these corporations, I think they're going to start to find some spin pretty soon. And I think, they've already done it a little bit, but with the China thing, and then another argument that they make sometimes is about how it's going to, you know, make goods cost less and things like this. But cheaper shoes don't mean anything if you don't have a job, right? And cheaper commodities shouldn't be our benefit off the backs of people working in slave-like conditions in other areas of the world. And so I think it's going to really take a progressive revolution in this country and people voting for candidates that don't just sort of say the right things at the right times, but really take a look at where is their money coming from, who are they interested in helping, and if we can change over, I mean, just Congress itself, 435 members, if we could get 100 congresspeople that are actually progressive and are going to go and fight on behalf of the American people, you can start to stop things like fast track and TPP a lot more quickly.
All right, Preston, let's spend the last couple of moments of this conversation on your candidacy. You're running against Nancy Pelosi, a very important Democrat. And I should just put out there, in the interest of respecting the equal time rule, I invite Ms. Pelosi on my program to have an interview just as lengthy as this one, particularly as this program does air in the San Francisco area. Let's talk about, very briefly, your position outside of the trade deals. You've clearly made it this far in the race, thanks to California's top two candidates' rules. What else do you stand for as a progressive candidate looking to beat Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah, so I am an early endorser and a big supporter of Bernie Sanders for president. I believe in, you know, the basic progressive values. We need to fight for a woman's health, not just a woman's right to choose, but access to health care. We have to fight to continue to push for gay rights, equal rights across the board for all humans, social justice. I support Campaign Zero. But the important things that set me apart from my opponent are the idea that money is totally corrupting politics. We spend a lot of time talking to folks. And right now, trust for Congress is at an all-time low. And it's not surprising. Over the last 30 years, Congress has really done a lot. It's been, some economists argue, the number one factor in stealing money from middle class and lower income Americans and shuffling it up to the wealthiest 0.01%. So to combat that, I'm running a campaign on small donations. I can legally accept $5,400, but instead I only accept $540 because the average person can't afford to give a congressperson $5,000. That's a lot of money. And even $500 is a solid amount of money, but it's still within the reach. So I've had some millionaires donate $500. I've had some kids just out of college, single parents. So a lot of people can participate in that campaign. And it makes sure that I'm not focused on raising dollars from super wealthy individuals, but instead on legislating on behalf of the American people, and specifically the people of San Francisco, whom I will represent. And so, like you mentioned, we have a very interesting race. I'm the first progressive candidate she's faced in more than 10 years, and I'm only the third non-Republican to meet her in the general election as her major opponent. And in this election, we're very excited because California does have a top two system, which means we ran in a primary. I beat the Republican and the Green Party candidate, and now it is only myself and Congresswoman Pelosi. So a lot of times, as an independent, people would say, well, you're going to accidentally help the Republican. But in this case, there's no Republican. And so I look forward to enjoying a broad base of support based on the idea that I'm not going to accidentally get, you know, a Donald Trump Jr. elected to office with my campaign.
Preston, good luck to you. We'll post a link to your website from our website later today, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Preston Pickus is a progressive independent candidate for Congress in California's 12th district in San Francisco, running against Nancy Pelosi. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.